Last week, we had a naturopathic doctor on the program. He was discussing the growing acceptance of natural medicine in conventional medical circles. He made his point by saying, and I paraphrase, "People are beginning to realize this isn't voodoo." For several reasons, I stopped myself from saying, "That's funny," because next week on the show will be about voodoo. Indeed, the show today is about voodoo, and yet our guest this week is not a bone-in-the-nose African or Haitian man, as you might surmise, but actually a nice woman of Jewish heritage. Sally Ann Glassman has been a voodoo practitioner for over 20 years. She was ordained as a Manbo, a voodoo priestess, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti in 1995, and is the author of Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery. Today, we ask you, the listener, even more than usual, to keep an open mind and hear one woman's transformative experience with a religion that is perhaps the most misunderstood one on the planet. Sally, a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Some of the credit, some would say blame, for your chosen path might go to your family, which encouraged tolerance and acceptance of exotic points of view and insisted on scholarly excellence. This must have been more than they were willing to swallow at first when you started talking about voodoo.
Especially since both my parents were atheists. And I would say my dad was even a little anti-religious. He was quite alarmed. It wasn't because it was voodoo. It was because I was religious in nature. I had a spiritual bend to me. And I would say I was born that way. I think from infancy, my first memories are simply of seeing the world that way. I didn't see things in terms of surfaces. I saw things in terms of the substance beneath it. I saw spirits. I was just aware that there was more than what we say meets the eye. I think it wasn't until I was much older that I myself realized there was anything different about me or about that perspective. My family has been incredibly supportive, actually. They were concerned at first, and I've had long talks with each of them, but they're all intelligent. They're all people who are moral and people who are concerned with ethics. They're concerned with encouraging creativity and encouraging people to reach beyond themselves, finding their potential, all of which voodoo encourages.
Excellent. You talk about ethics, which, and now this is a bit of a sidebar, but ethics very is central to the notion of voodoo, because if you do it wrong, boy, and especially in this time and age, it can really backfire. And I guess we'll get into that as we go along. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Maine and in Connecticut. I went to college in New York for a while, and I was living in my cousin's unheated barn in Kennebunkport, Maine, one October 1st. It had gotten down to about 30 degrees. And I knew I needed to move somewhere. My brother said he was moving to New Orleans. So I thought, voodoo and jazz sounds interesting. And it was. I was on a plane the next day. It took me a while to get over the culture shock and to get past what you will see and find easily, which is the tourist version of voodoo, which is much more like the Hollywood version. It took quite a while to get to know real practitioners and to get to the real heart of the religion. I had the same misconceptions about voodoo that everyone has. I'd seen the same horrible movies, the exploitive and lurid Hollywood version of voodoo, and I'd read the same sensationalist tabloid literature on it. So I thought it was evil, and I thought that it would endanger my immortal soul if I even spoke the word. But something in my head said to me, "Why are you so afraid of something you don't know anything about?" And I think that fear is a real indicator of areas that we need to work on in ourselves, places where we can find our way to freedom if we can just walk through our fear. So I started researching. And as I studied, I discovered a religion and a way of life and a philosophy that incorporates unbelievable dance forms, beautiful music, incredible art, that gives people a direct and irreplaceable and irrefutable experience of the divine right here on earth, and gives to its followers a real sense of meaning beneath the seeming chaos of everyday life.
Well, let's talk about that myth-busting and allow you to elaborate on that. Because, I mean, you know, when you put it in the context of a misunderstood religion, it puts in a whole different context, especially here in the politically correct Northwest. You know, if you started saying things like this, about Christianity, you know, you say, wait a minute, he rose from the dead and an immaculate conception. I mean, that, you know, when you think about it, that sounds a lot like some kind of voodoo and some kind of crazy scenario. And yet we all buy that, those of us growing up in the, Christian heritage. But voodoo has the worst image of any religion on earth, you say, and you blame Hollywood.
I blame Hollywood. I blame also Victorian novelists, people who saw some kernel of what they were expecting to see, and their own imaginations went wild with it. They formed their own conclusions and interpreted according to what they themselves were capable of understanding. I think a great deal of our own shadow psychology got projected onto voodoo, and, you know, this comes out of Africa. It's the dark continent, and here are these wild, crazed, depraved natives running amok and playing with forces that shouldn't be touched. I think also that in the West, we've allowed whole areas of our psyches to atrophy. And when we encounter a culture that encourages those more submerged areas of the mind, our intuitions, our inspirations, our creativity, we become afraid. And rather than acknowledge that we're afraid, we label it as evil or dangerous or primitive or superstitious, none of which is appropriate for voodoo.
We project, so what would you say then we project into the shadow in the society? Sex, obviously.
Sex, obviously. Violence, malevolence, wanting to do harm to another, wanting to exert will over another person's will, lack of self-control is a big one that we attribute to voodoo, when in fact the reality of it is that it takes a great deal of self-discipline and self-knowledge. It takes mastery of technique to be able to put your ego identity aside for a moment and to allow something greater than yourself to come through you.
Very, very interesting. Your Jewish background has some benefit to your current vocation because of the mystical side of Judaism, the
Absolutely.
Kabbalah. Yeah, and there are some links between the Kabbalah and the beginnings of voodoo. Tell us about that.
Yeah, voodoo is what's called a syncretic religion. It takes on traits of the other cultures that it encounters. So voodoo has its roots in the Fon and Yoruba traditions of Western Africa. It was taken through the slave trade to the New World. Landed in Haiti, or Saint-Domingue as it was called at the time, met up with the French Catholic colonist culture there. So it has many, many traits of Catholicism in it, especially visually. However, there were also Masons on Haiti at the time. They were Portuguese and French, and they brought Jewish mystical traditions with them. And there was also even an Italian three-penny opera, a burlesque show that the freed slaves were allowed to watch and contributed several of the more charismatic characteristics to some of the spirits.
A little bit of that, a little bit of this, and before you know it, you've got a nice tasty stew, don't you?
Yeah, a real gumbo.
Yeah, exactly, which is what America is. You know, they talk about the melting pot, but a melting pot is, I don't think, the good analogy, but the stew is a better analogy because everything sort of retains, you know, you get that taste in there and it doesn't have to give up its own identity to become part of something larger.
It makes it a much more powerful force when we can include instead of excluding. In the West, we do have a tendency to try to repress parts of ourselves that we have decided are unsavory or don't fit our social standard. Whereas in the Haitian cultural view, it's just who we are. And we need to learn how to meld the different parts of our being, meld different cultures, and learn to dance. I was myself a little surprised to find myself in the middle of a week-long Haitian initiation to become a mambo. As a middle-aged Jewish woman, it seemed a little odd to me at the time. I did find that many of the priests and priestesses that we were working with that week would use the word Kabbalah. They knew what it was, and they were using it accurately and understood the mystical meaning of it. So these are not ignorant people by any means.
We're talking with Sally Ann Glassman. She's a Manbo, voodoo priestess, and author of Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery. I'm Paul Nelson. Yet, you know, you talk about voodoo and talk about the shadow side. Voodoo itself obviously has a shadow side, something not to be messed with or to be messed with very, very carefully. Tell us about that.
I think the main premise is that voodoo really, truly is powerful. And I think it is powerful because it is real. We recognize that it's something that's true and it speaks to our humanity. And I think that whenever we're online with honesty, facing our own humanity, our strengths, and our weaknesses, that it gets a little dangerous. The moment a person starts hiding from themselves or hiding from the spirit or tries to exert their own ego over another's, it becomes a dangerous ground. And the spirit sees you. You know, it's brutally honest. And I think that, far more than anything else, makes us recoil as socialized people. I think all of us are born into a state of innocence, and through schooling, through our parentage, through socializing, we shut down parts of ourselves. We become crippled effectively in order to fit in order to be successful in our culture. Voodoo invites each of us to be real with ourselves and to take up our power. Whole portions of our society are marginalized and disempowered, and here you have this religion and this way of life that's saying, nah, just be powerful, just do it, live that way. So it is possible to take this power and abuse it, the prime example being Papa Doc Duvalier, the dictator of Haiti, who claimed to be using voodoo to intimidate the other Haitians, and quite effectively so. I know that when we last invaded Haiti, I think it was the president of Haiti, said that they were going to use gopher dust, which is graveyard dust made from the bones of AIDS victims, and they were going to blow it on the Marines, which I would find fairly intimidating. But, you know, it can be used to aggravate or provoke the imagination, unfortunately. There's a distinction made, however, by voodooness between black magic and voodoo, the religion, sorcery and voodoo. And while voodoo incorporates magic, what we think of as magic, and I would say in a positive light, the magic that makes life worth living, makes it exciting and interesting, makes it possible to transform. But a magician is limited to magic, doesn't have other options. So, for instance, just a simple example, you might go to a magician wanting to force someone to love you, and they might take your money and give you a love potion and force that other person's will to you. However, if you went to someone who is a priest in the voodoo religion, they would do a ceremony to align your life force with the spirit of love so that you could love yourself and open your heart up and recognize that you're worthy of love. One takes a lot longer and is much harder to get to, but has lasting results.
We always want that instant fix in the society, mm-hmm. and that's not what you'll get from what you're talking about. What you're talking about reminds me of the difference between miracles and parlor tricks.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
Yeah. Voodoo has to be a powerful thing because its roots are in the slave trade and its beginnings are intertwined with the notion of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, if you think about it, these people were taken from the west coast of Africa. They were stripped of everything that they had, of each other, their friends, family, their position in society, their wealth, their knowledge. And they were thrown into the hulls of these slave ships. Most of them died, most horribly. It must have been absolutely terrifying. And I think about the resilience and the adaptiveness and the creativity and strength of these people to carry their gods in their hearts and minds, to not let go of them, to find a way to adapt. And they created this beautiful religion and this way of life that's healing and full of hope. And even going there now where life is so hard, it is extraordinarily humbling to see how they create works of hope out of absolutely nothing. And I believe that voodoo helped them endure the unendurable. A lot of people will say to me, oh, voodoo doesn't work, obviously, because Haiti is so poor and life there is so bad, and if it were this great thing, they'd all be rich. And I say to them that voodoo isn't going to make your life easier, it's not going to make you wealthy, but it will let you know at what point and to what degree you can engage your own life and live it, experience it.
You know, many of the reasons why people are disenfranchised with traditional religions or disenfranchised from traditional religions today is because these religions are hierarchical, they're dogmatic, they're theoretical or non-experiential. Perhaps a voodoo is the antithesis.
Absolutely. There's no orthodoxy, there's no central church, there's no one's ring to kiss. And it's very fluid. One person practicing is going to do different things than the next person. It's different in Haiti than it is in New Orleans, and there are changes, subtle differences between one temple and the next, which I think is beautiful and well within Voodoo's tolerant nature. So it does encourage the individuals who practice it to base their work on a solid foundation of tradition and to give respect for what has come before, to master a technique before you try to sing before the gods. But it finds its ultimate expression in improvisation and in spontaneity.
You get grief for being a white girl, a nice Jewish girl doing this? I mean, did you go to Haiti and have some people look at you and say, wait a second, this, you can't, she can't have the juice?
Well, they did divination on us before we went, so they knew who they were getting, and they talked with the spirit, they talked with the Loa, and they knew in their hearts that we were moving into their family. They welcomed us, and they certainly came and stared at us a few times.
And wait a second, can spirit be right? Who is this girl,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there were tests going on, and I think they were as amazed as we were that we got through it, because it wasn't easy. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was also the most rewarding thing I've ever done and the most real and palpable spiritual experience I've ever had. I have had difficulty since in the United States with people who feel that I'm trying to usurp a culture from people who have already had so much taken from them. And I certainly understand the perspective and try to give it respect and, you know, the time it needs to work through these things. I don't agree with it, however, and I do believe that Voodoo and the spirits of voodoo represent universal principles that we all recognize, whoever we are. But it is absolutely essential to give that first respect to those ancestors who did carry voodoo to the New World.
And if they give you enough grief, you make a doll of them, stick some pins in, and you don't have any problems.
Right, sure.
Now, that's one of the myths of voodoo. Tell us about that. I mean, you really can do that if you wanted to, couldn't you?
You could.
You wouldn't.
I would not. I might use a doll for healing. Actually, if I was working with a patient who wasn't anywhere near me physically, these dolls actually are based on African fetishes called Nkisi. And in Africa, they were generally wooden. They generally had crevices in them into which herbs would be stuck. And to activate the herbs in the crevice, they would use nails and hammer them in. Now, in the New World, these slaves didn't have access to wood carving tools, obviously. So particularly the domestic slaves used cloth and made cloth dolls. And the same principle holds true. You're working with sympathetic magic, that if the elbow is ailing, you treat the elbow on the doll and it will affect the person. They are, by and large, used for positive healing purposes. But, of course, as with anything, it can be used for a negative purpose as well.
Very interesting, because we're beginning to see the Western empirical scientific validation of this with Rupert Sheldrake and morphogenetic fields.
Absolutely.
He was on the show in the last few months.
And we're also discovering that the herbs that are used in voodoo, the root doctors say, actually have some clue what they're working with. These herbs actually have medicinal qualities.
Absolutely. Voodoo can be used not only for your own individuation, but also for the well-being of one's community.
Absolutely, and I think that's essential to voodoo and what differentiates it, say, from even the New Age movement. What is so important in voodoo is not getting that warm, fuzzy feeling inside of yourself that you're all right with yourself and happy to be alive. It's more than that. You do obviously have to have that part of things going for you. But voodoo is absolutely about service and service to the spirit and service to the community, as exemplified by the whole possession experience, that when a person goes through possession trance and their ego moves aside and the spirit comes through them, acts through them, talks through them, interacts with the community, gives advice, gives healings, and when the person who's been possessed comes out of the trance, they have absolutely no memory of what happened. The possession was not for them. It was for the community, for everyone's well-being. It does leave a residual sense of awe, I believe, even within the cells of the body. That's quite an experience. And so there are benefits for the individual as well. But they say in voodoo that service to the spirit is service to the community, and service to the community is service to the spirit.
And you've done this for your community. Can you tell us briefly about that story?
Yeah, we've done a few things, but I think what you're talking about is the
crack
ceremonies
dealers, yes,
to prevent crime. I live in the Bywater neighborhood in New Orleans, which at one time had the highest crime rate in the United States and was really quite unlivable. There were murders going on constantly. There were robberies, tremendous amount of drug dealing, prostitution on the street. And it was scary and made it very hard to just have a normal life. So it occurred to me, since we knew who was doing the stealing and who was doing the drug dealing, that we could come out as a community and do a ceremony on their front step and say, we can't live like this. And we weren't getting any cooperation from the police or from the politicians, so we decided to go to a higher authority. And we needed a kick-butt urban loa who would take no prisoners and from whom no one was exempt. And we called on Ogu Laflambeau, who's a warrior spirit. He's the master of the iron forge, and we asked him to make us into better metal. So we went out with 151 rum and gunpowder and flamethrowers and drums and dancing feet, and the whole neighborhood came out. It was really impressive. And the crime rate has dropped 65%, and we were listed in U.S. News as the second most trendy, desirable, up-and-coming neighborhood in the United States. So it's a far cry from where it was.
And now it's time to do another ritual to keep the yuppies out.
Yeah, really. Get rid of that gentrification.
Oh, my. Now, you're a petite woman. What, 5'2", 100-some pounds, maybe, dripping
yeah.
wet, right?
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of, you know, they would say in Cuba, it takes cojones to do something like this. It takes a lot of nerve to do something like this. And yet you feel protected or what gives you the strength?
I absolutely feel protected. And you know when it's right to do something. And I did have my community behind me. And I also know that in the hearts of all of us, each person, including the drug dealers, there's still a human being there. I know that each of us, and I know this from voodoo especially, that we each have some portion of God's life force or energy. We're all included within God's energy. So we're each the children of spirit. And I believe that when you appeal to that part of each person with respect and honor, they overcome themselves.
We're chatting with Sally Ann Glassman. She is the author of Voodoo Visions, An Encounter with Divine Mystery.